first talk for the session is by Patricia Shaw, Jill Campbell, Elder Larry Grant, Fiona Campbell, Vanessa Campbell, Marnie Point, and Grace Point. And you'll be hearing from them on transformative impacts of language reclamation on well-being, healing, and growing.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your patience while we got the sound system working here. I want, first of all, to respectfully acknowledge with gratitude our presence here on the traditional territory of the Hawaiian peoples as the caretakers of this land, and the wonderfully generous hospitality with which they and all the organizers of this conference have welcomed us. So what we're going to be talking about is our program, which is a partnership program between the University of British Columbia and the Musqueam Indian Nation. And part of the story is the integral relationship that we have built with the academic institution and with the community. And so there's this long story. We've been working for 20 years, and it would take a long time to go into all of the details. So I'm going to rush through the introduction of all of my team members here with the hopes that you will get to know them. But the relationship between language reclamation and well-being is embodied in the courageous and immensely dedicated lives of these people that I've been so privileged to work with. So I'm really pleased to have them here and to introduce them to you. So we started this program in 1996, and Jill was selected by the Musqueam Indian Band to be their representative to work with them. And that was on the basis of, before there was a Master Apprentice program, she had actually apprenticed herself because she was a homemaker with a senior elder in the community at Sparrow. And she worked with him as a caretaker for 10 years, and she would come in the front door and just say, he would say, in Hunkaminam, so she would, what are you doing in Hunkaminam? And she would say, how do I say I'm taking off my boots? and they would proceed from that for 10 years. And she is just a wonderful language learner and a beautiful interactor in this context. So she was my first partner. And in that context, we worked together with the Musqueam Indian Band to establish a protocol agreement governing the authenticity, who has control, who has access to the language, who has copyright, and who has use. And I just want to mention that every participant in our classes are open to everybody, UBC students, every Musqueam community member, signs a consent form to abide by the terms of this protocol agreement. So it's been very unique at that point in time and very functional for us. And so then, in 1997, our next team member, Marnie Point, registered in the class as a student. Okay, so that's her then. Then in 1998, Larry Grant had just retired as a longshoreman, and he registered in the class. Okay, so I'm taking you through the timeline here, and so much for his retirement, as his wife Gina will tell you. So then Fiona Campbell in 1998 as well, who's a member of our team here, was a first year art student, and she registered in the course. And 1998, Grace Point registered in the course. And this is where Grace is now. So I'm telescoping the trajectory of each of these people, but she's a TA for the second year, the intermediate level courses, and she works in early childhood education in the preschool along the reserve, and she's taking her certification for that. And then in 2002, Vanessa Campbell registered for the course and went through our programs, and she has functioned since 2005 as a teaching assistant and as a research assistant for the program as well, and works as well for the Musqueam Indian Band Language and Culture Program. Okay, and then we come back to Jill. What has Jill done in the interim? Jill has become the manager of the MIB Language and Culture Program, the co-author of the textbooks that we have for the program. She's taught every level. She works in preschool. She works in community language classes as well. Okay, and then Marnie Point, where is she now? She is actually, she's gone through, she's got her B.Ed now, she's got her M.Ed in technology, she's the urban coordinator of the NITEP program, she's an adjunct professor at UBC, and those are her next. So these are the transformative changes in their personal lives, and they've all effected tremendous change within the community, as you can see from the different levels of the community. And then we got Larry. Okay, well, Larry has done a tremendous amount of work. And amongst these things, I just want to mention that a major theme with respect to language and health is the relationship between language and identity. And a core marker of identity is one's name. So one of the transitions is that, as many of you know the story, my name is Sapitza by Shirley Sterling. Okay, Larry is now known by his traditional name, and that's one of the transformations that's taken place. So it's Ayashar. And you'll hear more from him. And this is just one stellar case study of the impact of language reclamation on health and well-being. So Larry just turned 80. He's in the classroom teaching all the time. He's the elder in residence. He's contributed so much to the community and to the university and to society at large. He speaks everywhere. And I really raise my hands to you. Okay, so there have been significant shifts in language health in the community. On the one hand, they've seen the loss of the last fluent speakers of the language. There's sharply divided opinions at the beginning about the value of reclamation. There were uncertainties about, well, what was our dialect compared to the other dialects? These were serious questions. But what we've done through the program, through their work at the community level, is build community-based capacity in documentation, conservation, and archival skills. So they are doing that work. Contributed to consensus building in setting goals and in charting a diversity of inclusive pathways to an increasingly extensive recovery of the linguistic and cultural heritage that was their birthright. So the core is the university classes. They're hosted in the community. UBC students travel to the reserve. The community is open to them, but they're open to everybody. They're open to everyone in the community as well, regardless of your educational background. And what it's triggered is a pride in Salish languages. All the languages of probably in this room are complex, and they're renowned linguistically from the linguistic aspect for that. The community members come to understand what that complexity is and how special and how unique a heritage it is for them. It also builds a collective sense of identity about their history and culture, and enhanced positive self-esteem and successful engagement in an educational experience, which then lets them ladder into further education, regardless of what that is, but they've crossed a threshold in that regard. Okay, so what are the indicators of language health? We're going to talk about connections to land. Marnie is going to do that. And this is the sequence of speakers, identity markers in the linguistic landscape, multi-generational interactions in language use, the youth, how do you engage youth? We'll see ways of engaging youth who are really into this. The preschoolers and the legacy of hope from Larry. Okay, Marnie.
Thank you. So the revitalization of the Hunk Aminum language brings life and economy. It is like one of our weavings. It connects us to our ways, our traditions, our families, and our territory. Learning and speaking our language reconnects me to the words of my great-grandfather, Tsamuk, the very words that he uttered. This connecting me to my family brings the healing that we need. Learning and teaching the language allows me insight to even the very areas and stories that he taught. His connections and his time on this land are Tamuch, where we gathered and harvest. And this is some of the stories that, some of the class that we take right out into the land of harvesting are Tulis. The students love this, so we have a great time. And then, I even think that this is like maybe the land he played in and grew up and shared so much. So this grounds me as well. Teaching and sharing my language connects me deeper to how he did things. The tools that he made, like Shletston or Colton, where he did things, where he learned himself. His connection to this land, our home, and our river Stahl. When I think of him fishing and saying those words, Nemslas, and what this even reinforces the stories that my own father, well, our father, Grace is my sister, shared with us, and he would always tell us that when it was time to be on the water, they'd be on the boat, and my grandfather would just look into a certain area, and then he would tell Dad that they were going to this area and drop their nets, and pretty soon people in the village would also come and set their net in that area. So this Hunkaminam language anchors us in this place, in our territory, and even in ourself. Our indigenous languages define place and defines and establishes sustainability. Thank you. And so Fiona will be talking about the identity markers in the linguistic landscape.
Try and go quickly. I have a lot of pictures on my slides, and I'm going to flip through them very quickly, but if you want, you can go back to them in questions. I just want to introduce this idea of linguistic landscape by first asking you to look at the first and the second pictures here, representing the same somewhat troubled institution. But I want to ask you what the second picture was taken.
In Quebec.
You can see that just by the ordering of words on a display. The significance of representing yourself in a landscape is something that is incredibly meaningful to people in connecting themselves with their identity and their lands. So I'm just going to share a number of sort of brief visuals with you. So putting language back on the land has been part of this whole process of developing health in the community. Street view, Google. You can only be in one place in the world if you see these signs. Hunkaminam on top, of course. The land, considering the river, considering the whole territory and putting the words on it, is a modern approach, but making sure those places are getting their right names. This is the first thing that we do in our classes with the new students. Public visibility, it provides validation, legitimization, normalization is really important of the language and the systems used to write it, because it provides visual confirmation and just awareness for everyone. So these are signs from the Tsisnan exhibit that was in a museum, but it's not just museums where you see it. You see it in the broader community at large. You're raising the profile of the language and of the people by including things like theater with pronunciation guides, you might notice, and sound recordings so that people can learn to say the words correctly when they want to engage with the language. Places like UBC naming houses, residences for young students coming in raises that awareness. Showing up in prominent places with the language front and center. And of course, more importantly, even celebrating Hunkaminam in the community. So making sure that it's fun, that it's visible, that it's associated with good things like eating, with work. Decorating ourselves and our world with the words, with the language, creating familiarity with the young people who, on this last picture, they colored this gigantic banner themselves with the help of their parents. And it really, something as simple as that draws them in to engaging with the symbols and with the language. And they want to know more, which draws them into the classroom. Do you want to learn to read Hunkaminam language? What are the friendly things that we can have in our classroom? And the student produced legacy of that. For the generations going forwards.
Okay. So I'm leave you there and let Vanessa talk about the digital linguistic landscape.
Yeah, just a couple things. Oh, do we want to play this?
If you want. I think it's short.
Yeah, it's really short. Yes.
Christnet, Enfa Alagarin, Kumakwim Tinawail, Ta'i. E Shlom Shlomo Tinawail.
This was one of the student projects from the class, and he just recreated a news scene and said, in Muskwim today it's raining. this slide is a picture of the online resource that we've created with the program. It houses almost 10,000 sound files, and so you can go onto the site and click these. And hear a number of different people saying a number of different phrases. And then I'm just going to play a quick Snapchat video for you. We created some geo filters on Snapchat, and the community has little messages for you. There's about a minute or so of that. We can play it after if you guys really want, but I'm going to invite Jill up to talk about some skipping.
Okay, in this section of the presentation, I'd just like to explore using common schoolyard games as a way of teaching language. Common games like tag and what time is it, Mr. Wolf, and skipping songs and things like that to teach language, but also help show that it can be they can be combined for learning or for healing as well. So schoolyard games are naturally very socially interactive games, and they create environments where a few leaders can take on the heavy lifting of learning a few lines or a song that go with a particular game, and so that the language learner, the language can be taught in a natural way, but within a defined script, and so it creates space for learners to just focus on participating. Okay, and then so also in this atmosphere, people who already, the participants, they already know the games, and so they can also focus on just bringing their own sense of good sportsmanship and fun to learning language. And so we do teach these games as a way of teaching language through repetitive patterns that is simple for learners to learn. And then they can learn those, and it increases their participation in the game and their fun. Okay. And so I'm just going to show you a little bit of the games here. I think I missed some. Okay. Nice. Yep. So I just wanted to. Because I might just move into the closet, sorry.
Okay, that's okay.
I just moved to the closet. Okay, so I just wanted to show through this little skipping video, and then I'll be done. You can see that everybody here knows what to do, how to take care of each other, and it really builds a context for inclusivity and respect and socially taking care of each other. So before we turn it on again, you'll see like all the little girls in the middle, they know what they're supposed to be doing to make this whole thing work. To be jumping, to watch the rhythm of the rope as it goes round. The girl over at the front here, you'll watch as she bends right over and right down. She's stretching out her arm. She wants the rope to go over well, to go over properly. So it contributes to the whole collective success of everybody. So we'll move on. And then there's another thing I'd like to show you. Yes, you can be my Becky. Oh, we've lost the sound. She's using her own strength, the own strength of her own legs, to be successful in the game. And then on the other side, the applause is for her, like it's supporting her success. And so I just think that's beautiful, that they're just caring for each other so much, and but in a really humble way. You know, and everybody knows their role, and they know what to do, and they know how to do it, and they do it, and they do it willingly on their own without being coached, like it's within all of us. So I just wanted to summarize really quick that, just to say the game, like playing like this, so it just shows that our time together can be a reminder that our human capacity for love and respect are as integral to our sense of identity as language and culture. Thanks.
Throughout my childhood and into my adult life, I have discovered that I've had difficulty in expressing my wants, wishes, and desires. Looking back, I realize it was
the Maya to work for CCM.
That's
the Maya to work.
Sorry. It's not average for your parents to speak to you by looking at you and to communicate almost telepathically. I've seen this lack of communication in many of our First Nations children, and their education has suffered as a result. It's my hope and desire to be a part of restoring this connection for the next generation and to help build their communication skills by learning our traditional language.
Buzz
the Maya to work for BCM.
That's
the Maya. Buzz the
Maya
to work for BCM.
I mean, it's
for hands. I swear, Thomas. Help your tech. Yes, new to be wetch.
Ah.
Yes, new to be piano.
Wow. We'll just kind of skip through. And so they learn days of the week, some weather names, and how to ask each other their names.
Thank you. The Legacy of Hope Foundation, Bridging Our Communities program in 2009 invited our program, the Musqueam UBC FNLG program, to be a participant in that final report regarding Indian residential school effects and the healing portion of it, so that we were invited to be participants in Ottawa, in Canada. It was a national report that was developed, and we were chosen because our program met the criteria that the Legacy of Hope had developed for us in the sense of the different criteria they had developed in the sense of what program would be the most advantageous program to bring forward to have the understanding of the value of language with healing. So that's something that we did in 2009, and they recognized us as the most promising program because we had developed a partnership with the University of British Columbia, and in that development with the University of British Columbia, there was continuity built into that relationship, and also a way of building the skills of our community members in understanding our language in being able to analyze and understand a little bit more about polysynthetic languages that are quite astounding, I think, in the sense that they can put all these things together, and to be able to create an awareness of what the languages actually mean to our health, as a huge determinant of our health is to have a language that belongs to us, that we belong to it, and we belong to the cultural practices that are in there, and that our ceremonial our ceremonies are embedded in the languages, and the languages have all these little pieces that tell us what's going on at the moment. Because you can, if you analyze the language, you can actually see what's going on right there in front of you. So that's something that we did. And you see in front of you the skills and the expertise that has been developed for the program at Musqueam. Every one of us here except for Fiona is a band member. And Fiona is a product of our FNLG program under the guidance of Dr. Patricia Shaw. And out of all of that, we get to develop the curriculum for the children and also to develop the books and have that come forward and be a part of who we are as a people. It really brings us back to where we are and our value within the country of Canada, in the creation of Canada. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I would like to end with saying that everyone that teaches Hunt Kaminam is a product of the FNLG program. They did not learn it on their own, and they did not get it from the universe. they are part of this program. I want to say thank you.
We have one more clip to play for you, but we'll just pay our respects to all the others who came before us. We're very grateful for the foundation that they laid.
We're already well into the 10-minute break. Can I ask the next presentation if it would mind, like, if we took one or two questions?
Please.
You guys are okay with that? Okay. Thank you. So feel free to, we have time for a question or two.
No questions.
That's all good. We told them everything.
Oh. Yes.
So I saw the interactions between the kindergarten teacher and the students. Do you have an immersion school?
Say it again.
We don't have an immersion school, but we have like little activities that are like morning calendar is immersion. So we're building it.
Elaborate a little bit more. So children in the K-12 or pre-K-12
settings. No, we have a preschool. So it's 3 to 5-year-olds, and they have a morning calendar, and they learn days of the week and counting and months of the year and how to introduce themselves and weather and concepts that they can use when they go to kindergarten the next year, but we teach it in Hunt Kaminam.
What's not apparent in this presentation, we do not have first language speakers alive anymore. So we're building, trying to build the expertise in understanding all the transcriptions that we have in our archives, and to be able to translate the Hunt Kaminam recordings into English so that we can have a translation for it in both directions. So we're working in a very, very limited scope in the sense of trying to develop a core that has the expertise in understanding the structure of language and creating the curriculum that gives you the structure of language that you can use if you so desire or have the ambition to do as a language learner. that's not apparent in what we're presenting, but that's our challenge.
We have to say goodbye right now. Thank you. If you guys have more questions, you'll be happy to present.